Hello and welcome to the Data for Subscriptions podcast, where we explore how to run better subscription businesses and what that takes. I'm your host, Berat Banyan, and today I have the pleasure of welcoming Jan Touton to the show. Welcome, Jan.
Thank you. Thank you for having me today on your show. Very pleased to be here.
So today we're going to talk about the data challenges in servitization or as a service businesses. But before we dive into the topic, why don't we talk a little bit about yourself? What's been your experience working with as a service businesses and what led you to where you are today?
Indeed, as we say sometimes, I started when I was very, very young, I would say. I started in the office equipment industry, and this is an industry where as a service is has always been there. So this is where I have been, I was initiated to as a service. We are talking about the 90s, last century. And since then, I've had a whole career into as a service business models in different industries, which led me 5 years ago to create Black Winch with the vision to regroup a team of experts who have the knowledge and, as we said, the closet full of t-shirts of as a service successes, and that are available for our customers to make sure that they download their expertise to our customers so they are also successful in their as a service journey.
Great. All right, let's talk about the topic for today. So I think this is a great kind of scene setter. And if we talk about as a service as more of a term, I've perceived it that it's been something that has been on the radar since over 10 years. In fact, I perceive that since about 2015-ish, I perceive that it got less focus. The conversation moved away from as a service for different reasons, but I perceive it to be very much back on the radar today. Do you have a view for why it has come back and become such a focus?
Yes, definitely. The first factor is technology. And I will refer here to IoT. Every piece of device today is connected, meaning that every piece of device is able to retrieve data and share those metrics coming from this data that will enable to measure consumption. And the principle of as a service is to have an outcome-based or performance-based offer that needs to be measured. So if your device is connected and is able to send some content on a regular basis, you are able to measure consumption, and then you are able to implement an as a service offer related to performance when it comes to billing and collecting, when it comes to managing the right services according to the usage, billing the different buckets you could have in your offer according to different level of usage, etc. So one big turning point is the fact that all devices are now connected and able to send back data to really make the as a service model and the pay-per-use model extremely attractive for both manufacturers and users.
So proliferation and maturity of technologies is a big underlying factor here.
You summarize it quickly.
I think so, and I think that that goes as well with the receiving end, whether we call it on the consumer side, and also we're seeing a bigger movement on the business side, per your own testament in terms of where you're doing more business, is that there is also an increased level of competence, acceptance, and openness due to, I would say, technology proliferation and maturity.
Yeah, so next to this technological aspect that is key for me, there's also a global adoption of society about consumption models. We all are, you know, using streaming platforms for our as a consumer for music or video. We are all being exposed to models like ShareNow, Airbnb, etc. So every consumption-based model where there is no ownership, in fact, of what we consume, is very much expanding in a B2C environment. And this is now moving towards the B2B environment, especially when it comes to solutions that can be provided by offering a performance and not just selling a device and the associated services. So think about not offering air compressors, but offering cubic meters of air compressed, for example. And that's the shift. That's the shift. Yeah. And this is what organizations are asking now. I want to buy performance. I don't want to buy specs. I want to buy a performance.
Yeah, you buy an outcome, right? And you're paying, you're willing to pay for that outcome. No, it's an interesting shift. We might touch it later on as well, as we'll discuss pricing strategies, and we might come into and discuss what is really value and how do you figure out where you put your price in terms of the value, i.e. based on the outcome. I wanted to ask you one more question, because sometimes I think what we're discussing here essentially is a shift to providing a digital service of sorts. Not necessarily want to get entangled into semantics, but I wanted to ask you, sometimes we refer to these services as subscriptions, sometimes we say as a service. In your view, are they one and the same? If they're not, how do you see them differ?
Yeah. So subscription and as a service are, sometimes they are the same and sometimes they are different. You can subscribe to a service or a product and usage of the product. But the question is, what will be your consumption of this product, and how will this be associated to your usage itself? So in other words, you can subscribe to a service, but there's no, for example, pay-per-use solution attached to it. So you will be invoiced no matter you use or not the service. And this is not then as a service. Or you can have also a subscription where you will have the possibility to opt-in, opt-out or not. And that's also a very important component of as a service. As a service has mainly two flexible components, opt-in, opt-out, or pay-per-use. So let's take the example of a streaming platform, video streaming platform. You subscribe, but you are not invoiced according to your usage. Basically, you watch or you don't watch videos, you will still pay your subscription. So I would not define it as a service model. It's just a subscription. That's my main difference between the two.
Got it. I think it's an important point to discuss, because I do think that when we put a lot of meaning into what we refer to these services as. But as we'll get into, regardless if we refer to them as a service or subscription, then what we want to really dig into today is how they evolve from being something basic to something more complex, which in a way for the end customer means something that becomes more personalized and more specific to their specific need, and you pay for that. So with that, I wanted to bridge over to the main question, which is, how do companies prepare to step into an as-a-service model?
Yeah, that's indeed a key question. Well, I would say two angles to answer this question. I want to be very precise here that we are mainly addressing in this discussion product as a service. So when there is an asset involved in the offer, which is very often, most of those as a service models today are not involving product. They're very often based on a digital service, but the association of a product is more recent. And back to the start of our conversation. So to prepare to have a product as a service offer can be taken from different angles. And very often, organizations already have a subscription to a service, which could be, for example, to a maintenance or a digital platform that is associated to the product. But the product itself is not yet involved into the as-a-service model. So in this case, it's good to identify, okay, what do we already offer to our customers into a monthly fee, into as-a-service model? And you will be surprised when you do this inventory that there's already a lot of businesses that are used to offer all their services, all their digital platforms into a monthly fee. So that's a very good starting point. If you have this starting point, the step is to associate the product to this existing subscription model. And then you have a complete solution, which is a product that is serviced and associated with a digital platform to be able to monitor it. And then you have really the core, really the starting point of your as a service offer. Of course, the discussion will be to make a lot of decisions about how to price, and we'll come back to that, how to price this this package, how to bring it to the market, how to bill it, how to monitor it. So there will be a lot of discussions. But the fact of having already an existing stream of a monthly subscription with your customer on services or digital platform is a very good starting point.
Let's talk a little bit about where value creation happens when you move from providing products, physical goods, to providing the as a service model instead. Where would you say that are the primary domains and areas for both the provider and for the customer?
Mm. Well, let's start with the customer. And by the way, we love to call it a user and not a customer anymore.
Gotcha.
So let's start with the user, the benefits for the user. The benefits for the user are, of course, the fact of buying a performance and not a product anymore. So you have the possibility to really choose the level of performance that you want to benefit from, and then to be able to adapt the payment of the level of performance that you need at a certain stage. So think about, for example, a company that is producing, I will take again this example of air compressors. You can buy air compressors, and then you're going to buy specs, and you expect that those specs are going to do the job you need. Or if your business and your production facilities have a fluctuation on the need of compressed air, then you will better buy cubic meters of compressed air and have them produced according to the variation of your needs in terms of consumption of these cubic meters of air. So the benefit is that you buy an outcome, you buy a performance. You don't have to take care of the maintenance, the depreciation, the renewal, the disposal of this equipment, because they don't belong to you. You are just buying cubic meters. So there's a lot of benefits to be much more agile and flexible, and I would say adapting your needs to the markets and to your own customers. So that's huge benefit. Of course, there are financial benefits because you don't have to cash out to invest in these infrastructures. You just pay a monthly fee. And if those infrastructures are bringing you some financial benefits, thinking about energy, for example, batteries into a subscription model, there's a benefit because you will be able to use those batteries to offload your production of energy to the grid and make some outcome by selling your energy to the grid. By doing so, the return on investment is direct because you have a monthly fee against an income associated to this device, this battery, for instance. Mm-hmm. That's also a very strong financial driver to move as a user to as a service. On the provider side, when you provide as a service, the benefits are, first of all, the partnership you enter with your customers. Because if you want to offer a performance and outcome, you have to partner. You are not just selling a spec and run away and come back 4 years later. No, you really have to understand the business of your customer to provide the best performance for this customer. Then you have an ongoing relation with your customer because you monitor every day the quality of the performance you deliver, because this is what you bill So you have to know what you are delivering. And it brings me to the concept of CSM, Customer Success Manager, that after the sale is done, very often we see a sales team that is in charge of onboarding the customer into the as a service model. But once this is done, it's the role of a CSM to manage the collaboration with the customer and to make sure that the customer is satisfied with the performance that is being provided. So there is an ongoing relation, partnership. Of course, there is recurring revenue that has a lot of impact on the valuation of the company. There is more loyalty from the customers. And of course, there is an increment of profitability because the more you offer performance, the more you offer services attached to it, where we all know that services are much more profitable for any organization than providing just a piece of hardware.
Oh, that's great. I'd just expand on what you said. The first point, which is flexibility and optionality, I would say would be a term for it. From value from a customer side, one observation from our side is that it lowers barrier to adoption, which is hugely valuable for the provider side. That is because an upfront investment, as you said, versus either you want to test it for a period or the fact that you can actually do incremental payouts and so on. So I think that's a huge factor. I wanted to ask you, when you talked about obviously the recurring revenues, one of the concerns sometimes from businesses is that you're used to be able to have predictability in a certain fashion with traditional sales. Uh-huh. When you move into an as-a-service model, there is a concern about forecasting and predictability. What's your view on that?
Yeah, so of course, you have much more predictability of your many aspects of your business. In fact, you have predictability of the revenue, of course, because you know what your contracts are and what is previous to be billed to the customer, so you can really forecast according to the coming billings. Second, you have also clear deadlines in your contract to be able to renew your contract. So there are clear timeframes where the customer has the opportunity to renew. And this is a very important point I want to mention here. I see a lot of organizations that move from transactional to as a service, and this renew point is not addressed because those organizations are still thinking linear. And so today, when you sell a product to a customer, you will, in a transaction, you will sell a product, and 4 years, 5 years later, maybe you call back the customer because you have new specs and you expect to sell those new specs to the customer. But if you're into as a service model, this customer has a lot of predictability when the contract will end. And because you've been following this customer during the whole cycle of usage, you know exactly what is the best solution for this customer at the moment of renewal. So you can very much anticipate the renewal and sell more value and offer a better experience to the customer at the same time. So there is a lot of predictability there, plus predictability of your production, because you know exactly when your contract will end, you know approximately how much, what is your churn rate, so you know approximately how much equipment you will have to produce for the next batch. And of course, you have predictability of equipment coming back from the existing contract and being able repurposed, refurbished, what you want,
sure,
but revalued, which is also a very interesting aspect of the predictability of the model. Yeah.
If we flip it on its head now, we've spoken about the value. What are the main challenges we should be mindful of?
Cultural shock. For a lot of organizations, this is a cultural shock. And the adoption of the model takes a lot of time to infuse and become the new DNA of the company. So there is a lot of changes in a business model that needs to be understood and accepted. So it's about change management. It's not just another line of product. It's a completely different business model. There is a revenue model shift, That is also important to manage because the revenue recognition and the cash to order is completely different. Mm-hmm. It has to be managed, especially if you're stock listed. It's very impactful. Sales, adoption, sales enablement. If you have a direct model, it's a challenge. If you have an indirect model, it's even more a challenge. So there's a lot of sales onboarding and enablement to be done. I would mention also pricing, so defining the right price point, and not being a cost plus as we are used to seeing a transaction model. And customer acquisition and retention, because you are re-entering it, as I said before, into a partnership with your customers. One last one that is very important also is funding and financing of the model. How do you make sure that you don't use your own funds to finance all those assets that won't be paid by the customers?
Given the amount of companies that you see and you work with, could you speak to one company that when you look at their transition and how they're running their as-a-service business, what they're doing really well, and if you could even point out what company that would be?
Yeah.
Could you give us a very concrete example?
Yeah, there's a company that really impresses me on the turn they've made to as a service, and this company is called Kaer, K-A-E-R. It's a company that offers cooling as a service, so air conditioning as a service. And they have made the transition from selling cooling units to offering climate control as a service. And this transition has been managed very, very professionally. First of all, they have created a full department dedicated to as a service. So they really have ring-fenced their as a service offer to start right. with. They had directly very good incentives for the customers, but also for the sellers, to transit from selling air conditioning units to climate control. A very solid funding strategy to scale the offer from using their own funds to going to external sources and to be able to finance all the infrastructure attached to it. And a very good refresh strategy with very good tools to leverage user data to optimize renewals and user and retention, in fact, of customers. So I really invite to browse their website. It's a very, very well offer. And now they are 100% as a service. And it took them about 5 years to transit from zero to 100% as a service offer. So they have stopped completely selling air conditioning units. That's a very good example.
That's remarkably fast that in 5 years. Now, I don't know about how long were they active as selling products before they started the transition to as a service?
That's a good question, and I don't have the answer.
Yeah. But 5 years is, of course, depending on the size of business, that's quite rapid to move to 100% as a service.
Yes, correct. What we observe, the tempo is more 1 year of design. Mm-hmm. Then the first year of the launch, you reach 3-4% of penetration rate after a year. That's roughly what we see. And then it takes 2 to 3 years to reach about 20% penetration rate. And then from there is the hockey stick curve, and then it accelerates very fast because you have the renewals that kick in, and then you start to have, you benefit from the first 3 years of the first sales. But yeah. Reaching 100% in 5 years is quite unique. I don't want to over-promise to people who are listening. Let's be conservative. 20% in 3 years is already very good.
If you could share, now you don't have to name the company necessarily, but if you could share an example where you see an example we should learn from, we could call it, where the execution has not been good. And it'd be interesting from your point of view and say, here's a business, and this is one or two spaces that, despite good intentions, they fail to execute, and why?
Yeah. Unfortunately, I have quite a lot to mention. Why does it fail? The first reason that I observe very often is that it's a standalone initiative. It's not backed up by the board. And there is no clear vision on the business model and the benefits that are attached to this new offer. So the first thing that we do when we talk to customers is there a sign-off from a board member that sees what it will be in 5 years in terms of company valuation? That's the first thing. And if you don't have this, it's ready to fail because it takes time and it takes investments, and the return on investments are going to kick in 4 to 5 years. So it is very important to have a clear view on the business model and very a yearly P&L attached to the projection of the as a service offer, to be able to have a strong support in terms of strategic implementation. I see treasury managers in charge of the offer, and they are standalone, and they have designed a complete offer from the treasury perspective, but of course it doesn't scale. I see headquarters that define a complete technical stack that is the dream stack, perfect in terms of customer journey. But there is no sales enablement, so it doesn't scale. So what is very important is not to make it a standalone or a headquarters view, but to have a very strong approach in terms of a internal startup or incubator with a sign off from the board to be able to make it happen. I could name other ones like the lack of funding strategy. So it's good, you start and suddenly you have all these assets on your balance sheet. And so what? You can't scale. The administrative overwhelm, it requires quite some workflow management. And those workflows management have to be addressed seriously. Otherwise, you just drain your financial team, for example, when it comes to
building.
Unclear KPIs or no KPIs. So yeah, a lot are related to change management and our basics of change management, but some are very specific to as a service. There's a lot of pitfall.
And this is a good segue, I think, to the next question where I wanted to go with regards to technology, because throughout this conversation today, you've mentioned also initially when we spoke value, that you when you shift to as a service, it allows you to be in constant dialogue with your customers.
Correct.
Another way to say that is that you have a constant flow of data where you can understand their usage, their patterns, what they're doing, what they're not doing, and that data you can use for multiple purposes. So if we speak about technology, I'd like to first open up with the question of how important it is to get the technology side correct as part of your plan when you enter as a service, or if you want to scale as a service. How much emphasis do you put into it?
A lot. Because what you described is the dream. When you are able to monitor the usage of your solutions by your users, this is the best world, because you know exactly what to offer, how to design your products and your next product, and which service to offer and how to scale with those customers. So that's the best. So what we see very often, what is very important, is when you launch a pay-per-use model with a product that will generate the metrics to be able to bill the usage, it is very important to design those metrics with the customer together. We've seen a lot of solutions that are being designed with a lot of metrics, but the metrics that is very important for the customer is not there. And then you have to redesign the whole solution. So it is key to agree with your customer on the fact that you will be like plugged to the usage of your equipment by this customer. Think about, for example, industrial cleaning machines. You know, the one you see on the airports where you see someone sitting on a machine and cleaning the floor of the airport. Some of those models are being offered into a subscription based on the usage. For example, the number of hours this machine will be used, but also the amount of liquid that will be used, the amount of detergent that will be used, etc., etc. And that will enable the billing of all the services associated to this usage. Knowing that an airport is using this amount of detergent is not very crucial, so I think this is a data that an airport is ready to share. But when you come to organizations where you have metrics that are very close to their core business, and you will be able to know exactly how much spare parts are being produced by this production line, and how much, for example, how much, I would say, what is the usage of this production line, that will connect you very close to the core data of your customer. So the point is, which data do you collect? And that's the main discussion. Which data do you collect, and can you anonymize those data? Because you, of course, enter into a very, very sensitive topic. And how to obtain user consent to be able to redistribute those data in your organization. And the best way is to build the dashboards together with your users so that you agree exactly on which data set you're going to display to whom.
Yeah.
Creating every time value. I heard you say yes.
Yes. I was going to have a follow-up on when it comes to data, when it comes to users, where how have you worked with different customers to solve for GDPR challenges? So this is one area where there is some complexity in aspect of knowing as much details about the usage of your users versus integrity and privacy. Is that something that you can expand on?
Yeah, this is very case-by-case approach, of course, because it really depends on the type of data you collect. But it's true that the GDPR regulation is very important to take into consideration in those aspects. So don't underestimate the discussions around data with your customers. That's very important to be very, very, very clear on the way this data set is going to be used. But there is no as a service without data collection. Let's be clear also. It's not negotiable. It has to happen. So you have to enter into discussion with your customer about that. And of course, it could start with a specific data set that is not the whole spectrum that you want to collect. And you can make some box, and then you can start with your customers on very limited amount of data to show how it works. Hence the importance, if you're a starter, to start your as a service offer with existing and loyal customers that already know you and trust you. So they will be open to have this discussion.
Let's go back to some of the other capabilities I wanted to bring up when we speak technology and the back end, since largely this is revolving how we collect, ingest, and use data in an as-a-service model. What are the key capabilities, if we speak the revenue management stack, that you guys focus on? What is most important to get right so that we can support the as-a-service business, would you say?
Yeah. What is very important is to link the data collection with the billing and collecting. And there are different aspects that are associated to that. The first one is that your pay-per-use model will certainly include a change of billing according to the consumption. So these different buckets in which your customer falls according to this level of consumption have to be monitored and implemented instantly. Again, take a very quick example. I'm back to this cleaning machine in an airport. And let's imagine that you agree that this machine is used 10 hours a day. But if you go above 10 hours a day, it's not €6 per hour, but €8 per hour for the extra 2 hours per day. How will you build that? How will you measure that? And how will you build that? And that's the complexity, especially if you have 20,000 machines outside and 20,000 users. So how to adapt your billing according to the consumption bucket in which the customer will be? That's one. And second, an as a service offer is very often made of services that you don't produce yourself, that you don't deliver yourself. So another service offer will be made of an ecosystem of players that are organized by yourself to serve the user. Think about car leasing, that a lot of people use car leasing. In a car leasing model, you have a tank card, you have winter tires, you have an insurance, you have about 20 service providers behind the driver to provide him the best mobility solution. So when you collect the billing from this driver, how do you redistribute this rental to the whole ecosystem that has been providing a service? And that's another important component of the billing and collecting. So two components for me, the most important, there's much more, but the most important is how to adapt the billing according to the consumption bucket in which your customer is, and how to manage the redistribution of revenue to the ecosystem that is behind the service you provide.
I'd just expand on it, Jan.
Please.
Many businesses, since typically you come from a place of having done business, we spoke about providing products in one form or shape, and then you shift over to an as a service. So you could say one avenue that you need to plug into is your existing revenue management or your quote to cash environment, which comes from your selling product world. While in a subscription or as a service model that you phrased well, the requirements are different, such as the upsides, of course, are different based on all of the points that you made.
Definitely.
When it comes to the user side, the most successful businesses that we observe, or I observe, are the ones that are able to create perfect transparency, I call it, if there's such a term, for the user, meaning that you know as a user exactly what you're using at any given point of time, what the parameters for those are, what you're paying, etc. And that's just an aspect on the user side that goes back to managing that data. Then I think the partner settlements is extremely complicated and often overseen.
Mm-hmm.
And that complexity eats you up as well. So that therein lies quite a lot of difficulties. What I then wanted to expand on is, typically we see that there's a lot of homegrown solutions to managing this data, and just by this picture that we painted, obviously is very, very complicated. I mean, you mentioned yourself that you could easily have 20 different providers within your partner ecosystem, and then you might have thousands, or if not hundreds of thousands, of users on the other side, depending on what business you have. What in your view is the reason why we see still quite a lot of homegrown cooking when it comes to managing this extremely important asset, which is the data?
Yeah. It's make or buy, first of all. So a lot of organizations are still struggling between make or buy. So I think a lot of organizations underestimate the risks that they are making by having it homemade, because basically you have a risk of errors. So there could be a lot of mistakes. As you were saying, transparency is very important for the end customer. So if you have a wrong billing, then you lose the trust of the customer. Same for your ecosystem. If you don't distribute this billing properly, you have problems with your ecosystem. That will lead to revenue leakage, obviously. I mean, they are quite easy to spot when you arrive at a customer who's doing it in-house. And it could be huge, 10-15% of revenue leakage. It will drain the financial and operation teams, putting some risk also because internal processes will be mainly understood by a few people internally. So what if they are not here tomorrow? So yeah, it's quite an important hub, I would say, in the Azure service offer, because this data exchange will fuel almost all the aspect of your Azure service model. It will fuel the maintenance teams to do proactive maintenance. It will fuel the consumables team to provide the right consumable. It will fuel the sales team in terms of usage of overconsumption or low consumption.
Right.
It will fuel the finance team in terms of readapting the model and the pricing and the contract if the consumption is not according to what is expected. So it is really a hub that distributes information to all the players in the organization around the best customer experience. And this is extremely key. Can't be done with Excel and emails or a smaller add-on on the ERP.
My take is that we're still very early when it comes to the as a service journey, despite the fact that we have numerous companies that have been providing subscription in one form or shape, or as a service model in one form or shape. But generally speaking, we're still at the infancy of this journey,
yeah,
where majority of the development is still ahead of us. My take is simply the following. It's competence and experience related in the organizations. There's absolutely a conviction that how hard can this be? We've built products. We might be engineers. We can probably figure this out. But another observation is that more often than not, and you mentioned that as well when we spoke about the common mistakes or pitfalls, that companies run into huge complexities that slows down their potential and their business initiatives when it comes to as a service for this exact reason. It's quite important that we, as we do today, we talk about the fact that there are the right ways to do this, and there are great examples across industries. And I would say, in particular, the one industry that we always talk about is the telco industry, where obviously they were the originals of providing sophisticated subscription models,
mm-hmm.
where your, let's call it, data management backend is not a hinder to your business. Quite the contrary, it's an enabler that can accelerate your business for all the reasons that you mentioned.
Completely aligned. Yeah, that's a propeller.
I want to ask you. We're about to wrap up very soon. I want to ask you about pricing, because we talked about this early on in our conversation, and I really want to get your perspective on what are the best practices you've seen for pricing when we speak as a service.
Yeah. Moving from transactional to as a service, very often transactional, the pricing is cost plus. And this is a different approach when it comes to as a service. You can have a pricing that is based on the performance and the outcome, so a value-based pricing. You can have a pricing that is also based, of course, on a market positioning, but basically the pricing is what is interesting is that you have the capacity to deliver more value to your customers and price for this value. So I'm going to give one example: flexibility. So the flexibility for opt-in, opt-out, for example, for part or the complete infrastructure. This opt-in, opt-out has, of course, some rules. You are not going to offer a 1 month opt-out for the whole infrastructure you provide. But for example, you can say after 2 years, you can opt out 2% of your business, or 2% of the contract we have together, or 10%. This has a price. This flexibility has a price. And this is something you can include in your prices. So that's very interesting to have a pricing design that is based on the value you deliver. So I'm a strong advocate of a value-based pricing when it comes to as a service that is delivering your performance, integrating all the services, and having the flexibility also priced. Already those three components have a huge value for the end user. So it's a good way to stop doing a cost plus pricing, but to have a pricing that is value-based. And then, of course, to have a pricing that is dynamic by using data-driven insights to adjust the pricing in a very dynamic way based on a factor such as behavior, demand fluctuation, market conditions, et cetera, et cetera. So there has a lot of... It's very playful, in fact, the pricing of an as-a-service model. You can be very playful in a positive way with your pricing to surprise your customer and, of course, to have a better reward on the risk you're going to take on the as-a-service model.
And, of course, dynamic by that, I assume you mean that by having the usage component, in part dynamic could be that it depending on your usage. But I'm also taking that in certain types of businesses, we could see prices fluctuate depending on surges. I mean, up more peak hours versus less. You could have different price points at those, such as we've seen the most recent times in the last couple of years when it comes to, for example, energy.
Yes, seasonability. Of course, energy is a very, very good example to match the cost of energy on the grid. If you talk about electricity, but also any seasonality related business, where you can have a price that is completely different according to the level of seasonality of the business of the user. Yeah.
Gotcha. Jan, as a final question to you now.
Already?
Yes, it's been a great conversation, but I can see that we've gone for almost about 15 minutes. But I wanted to ask you, for anybody who is either looking to initiate an as-a-service model, or if they already have and are struggling, what would you ask of us to do tomorrow to make sure that we can succeed with our as-a-service model?
Get the management on board. Have a sign-off from a top executive to make sure that the initiative fits the organization big picture and that it's part of the overall plan and that you have time to implement with associated metrics. That would be my first advice. And not have a solo player. Don't be a solo player pushing this offer forward. To have a very good return on investment analysis, considering all the cost and the risk associated to develop the model, and whether proceed to do it yourself or to approach experts, of course, to make it happen. But the governance to implement this new offer has to be well thought through. And the last thing is to have a very, very clear funding strategy on how you are going to finance the assets that are not going to be bought by your customer anymore, but going to be used by your users. So how do you manage this transition from cash to order, that is 1 to 3 months today, to cash to order, that is 1 to 5 years or 10 years. So that would be the three main things that are crucial. Sign off from a top management, have it part of the company strategy, have a clear return on investment and a clear time frame to implement, and a clear funding strategy.
Jan, thank you very much for this conversation. I appreciate it. And thank you for everybody tuning in.
Have a good rest of the day.